I think the thing we have to get our heads around is if people are going to insist on having, let's say, a more local supply chain, a more robust supply chain, more supply security, there's a price to pay for that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium OnTrack podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson. Today, we're talking with Alan Morgan, technology ambassador from Ventech and president of EIPC. You may remember him from his keynote at Altium Live. He also delivered a keynote at EIPC this year, and I'm very happy to talk to him about some of the manufacturing trends happening around the world. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. So as I mentioned, you've been a keynote speaker at Altium Live. You also delivered a keynote at EIPC this year. I thought it would be great to talk to you about some of the manufacturing trends that have been going on in the industry. Maybe before we do that, if you could just briefly introduce yourself and then what it is you do at Ventech and what you do with EIPC.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the technology ambassador for Ventech. I have been for nearly 5 years now. I spent my entire life in substrates, you know, PCB-based materials, and I've really enjoyed working with Ventech. It means I get to keep pace with a pretty active manufacturer with a very broad portfolio. You know, the good thing about Ventech is they have products in many, many sectors, and I love the variety of working with them in different sectors. I support their technology. I work with their staff. I work externally as well, giving information to third parties like EIPC and conferences, and also OEMs and board makers. So that's my role with Ventech. And EIPC, I've been the president now for, I think, nearly 12 years. It's coming up to that. And again, the EIPC exists to support the PCB community in Europe. So we're very focused on PCB, and personally, I am as well. I mean, it's been my basic entire career. So EIPC does have a broader reach. You know, we do talk to OEMs, of course, and to designers. You know, the other thing that's very important for us is the design community in Europe. So I work closely with them, and again, through other organizations in Europe as well. And I think that's how I got the link through to Altium Live, which again, I really enjoyed talking to a big audience of very diverse industries, and a really, really great event. So I thank you for the invitation to join that, and also the invitation to join you today, Zach. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was because as I mentioned earlier a couple of times, you know, obviously the manufacturing trends are very important for those of us in the industry, but I always like to try and get the European perspective. I'm in the US, Altium's headquarters are in the US, a lot of our guests are from the US, so we don't often get an opportunity to get the European perspective on these trends. So what are some of the trends that you are observing in manufacturing, and where's the biggest growth area right now?
Yeah, so it's been a hard year, I guess. I mean, that's where we should start from. I mean, we've come out of COVID now, and everyone was hoping that, you know, 2023 would show some real growth. Of course, in terms of real GDP growth, it hasn't. But we are looking at PCB growth 2-3% this year altogether. So it's not been a disaster, but I guess people are lining up for next year to try and improve things. We're all suffering with in Europe, especially the after effects or the continuing effects of the war in Ukraine. That came as a big blow to us in Europe. You know, we had hoped last year to really begin a good recovery from COVID, and suddenly this disaster fell upon us, which has had big implications for raw materials, for energy costs, and many other things. So, you know, that's the kind of backdrop that we're sitting in. Manufacturers have carried on, of course, manufacturing. They've come out of COVID now back into full-scale manufacturing largely. And we're expecting around 2-3% growth in PCB fabrication this year. And it does bring European PCB manufacturing back to round about the $2 billion mark again. So we dropped down to sort of 1.5, 1.6 billion during the COVID years, or perhaps 1.6, 1.7. And we're back to nearly $2 billion again now. So that's what we're seeing. Of course, one of the big issues that inflation brings is the difficulty for investment. You know, investment is required in PCB manufacturing and in the materials to supply that. And this never seems to end. You know, the digitalization of our business has caused, you know, big investments to be required. And when you've got interest rates, you know, running at, 7-8%, inflation running at 10-11%, it's pretty difficult. There are some signs now of that slowing to some degree. But certainly, I mean, the big growth area, it would seem, is in packaging right now. We are seeing overall PCB growth forecast to grow, let's say, 5 or 6% in the next few years. But packaging, it's double digit. We're looking at 10-12%. So that's pretty important. And of course, in Europe, we do have one major player. There's only one in the top, I guess, the top five in the world, and that's AT&S. AT&S is, of course, a very successful and very big, you know, worldwide company, worldwide reach. And they really have been leading the way in new packaging technologies, substrate technologies in Europe, and I guess in Asia to some degree as well, where they have, of course, a lot of manufacturing. So I guess if I was to summarize where Europe is, it has one very big player in the market, but doesn't have very many other players involved in advanced packaging. You know, packaging is typically an Asian story. It's not very much a European story. And if we're going to participate in the growth of that market, we need to do something and make more investments into our let's say home domestic producers. And that, you know, I know AT&S is investing in a big way. We were there a couple of years ago, just before COVID, for a conference, and we saw the plant in Leoben in Austria. It was very impressive. But obviously, you know, they are very much in that sector, and there aren't many others in Europe participating to the same degree that they do. So I think that's going to be a story in the packaging side, but also on the PCB side. You know, we are certainly seeing that HDI is growing, you know, especially, you know, the finer pitch, you know, UHDMI. And again, capacity in Europe is limited for that. You know, we have some manufacturers. The thinking of the equipment required, take laser drilling machines, for example. I guess in Europe we have a few dozen of these machines. How many of them are capable of, you know, sub 75 microns, I'm not really sure, but let's say a few dozen. I think similar in the US, by the way, not very different. You know, China alone, the last time I knew, had over 1,000 machines. So, you know, we certainly know that China has a very big investment in that kind of technology. I think what's interesting now, when you look at HDI in particular, especially, you know, Ultra HDI, a lot of these markets for HDI have been around consumer products, you know, and I'm including mobile phones in that kind of sector, by the way. So that's been a very big driver for that kind of technology. I think what we have seen now, from a technology point of view, is we've seen that moving away from consumer into more, other applications. And I can include in that automotive, certainly, and I can include space as well. You know, space is now using HDI. They never did, but now they do. You know, they've gone through the quals, they've gone through all the reliability testing, and now HDI is becoming far more mainstream away from consumer. And that, again, I think is a big move for us in Europe. You know, Europe has never been hasn't been in recent years, a big consumer producer, certainly a big consumer market, but not a big consumer producer. And that has very much gone into the Asian manufacturing area. So I think HDI is becoming, let's say, more mainstream away from consumer now. And I think that will require another look and perhaps more investment in Europe. But again, that's not going to happen overnight. And let's be honest, you know, if you wanted to buy 1,000 laser drilling machines, you probably couldn't buy them right now. But I think it will shift the emphasis to some degree, and perhaps hopefully the reliance on the more, let's say simpler in some ways, you know, the two-layer and multi-layer technology in Europe, which is predominant, is being replaced gradually. And there's more HDI coming along, and I think we will see this grow and grow in Europe. So that's what I'm expecting to see in the next few years. And I'm certainly hoping that we'll get more, more a share of the packaging business as that moves forward as well, because, you know, double digit growth sounds very nice. Whereas, you know, for overall PCB, it's single digit. So, you know, that's the kind of way I'm seeing things right now.
So in terms of the growth for packaging, I mean, double digit growth, no one's going to turn that down, assuming they can get the capital to invest in it. But with packaging, there's really an overlap in terms of capability for UHDI. I mean, I know that the exact steps for the different products aren't exactly the same. However, it seems that if you're investing in one, you're really investing in the other.
Yeah, I mean the packaging market is, you know, is basically dominated by flip-chip BGA. I mean that's the biggest sector, but there's an awful lot of other areas in there. You know, this is a, you know, when you talk of technology, you know, you get a massive map when you look at this. I mean, certainly flip-chip BGA is the major part of it, but there's other things coming on as well. You know, there's the antenna in package, you know, the system in package coming along as well quite strongly, and I've seen, you know, very high growth figures for some of those other technologies. And they will, I'm sure, you know, take a bigger part of this as time moves forward. The question really is, you know, the technology requires investment. It requires equipment that's capable of doing this whole range of technologies. And, you know, I don't see a great deal of that in Europe right now. Some companies have it, of course, in a limited way. And I mentioned AT&S already. But when we get to more volume manufacturing and more flexible manufacturing, that's going to be a challenge. You know, one thing I suppose that typifies PCB manufacturing as against EMS, you know, that part of the market, is PCB manufacturing has many more steps. You know, we're talking hundreds of steps, and we're talking about a very variable process. You know, so if we are talking about advanced packaging, we're not talking about one production line. We're talking about a production line that can do lots of different technologies and different parts of production. Looking at EMS, typically, you know, you have quite, you know, obviously sophisticated machines, but the technology is pretty much nailed down for those lines. The variability or the number of different processes is fewer. So PCB, you know, by its very nature, requires a manufacturer to have all the tools in his toolbox and all the possible routings and methods for manufacturing the board. So I think, you know, once that gets into the PCB shop, it will, of course, be used for different technologies. But the investment needs to be the right one that gives you the flexibility. You know, we don't tend in PCB to nail it down to that degree because we don't know what designs are coming. You know, the days of the integrated manufacturer, OEM manufacturer are gone. So now the board shops are really jobbing shops, and they're driven by what the customers want. And that changes, and it changes, you know, not overnight, but it does change. If you look back, you know, the last 10, 20, 30 years, there's been a massive change in the kind of equipment required. You know, I think digitalization has been one of the biggest things that I've seen, certainly in my career. You know, and the investment cost now just gets higher and higher and higher. And I think we've seen, you know, in Europe, we've seen consolidation of manufacturers as well. We're down to about 175 PCB makers now, board makers. You know, that figure was over 500, you know, going back in the early 2000s. So the ones that really, I think, have dropped off, the ones who couldn't afford the investment or couldn't get the finance to make the investments in their business. Of course, there's been consolidation, so the market hasn't dropped by the same percentage terms as the manufacturers. But, you know, those that survive have to be, you know, reasonably bigger players and have access to capital. And that's something that in Europe we don't have the ease of, as, I mean, some companies in Asia do. You certainly see a longer expectation sort of for return on investment in Asia than we have typically in Europe. You know, and that's a mindset that we have. I mean, I heard a talk some years ago from a guy from, I think it was Alibaba Finance, I think. And he was saying that he doesn't see any lack of, you know, innovation, any lack of will in Europe. You know, he sees great things. What he saw was a lack of capital, access to capital markets. And I think that is something that, you know, maybe we have to sort of push on government a bit more. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that now. You know, we've seen the European Chips Act now, and as you have in the US as well. And that really is calling on government to help support our technology industries. And of course, for chip making, it's another story, another league again. You know, the investments we're talking there are, you know, many billions of dollars. But of course, private companies can do this. But again, they may not choose to in a market such as ours. So I think, you know, there's certainly been a subtle change in mindset there. And I think we are seeing now governments at least being willing to invest finance. And, we're hearing, you know, multiple billions of dollars being allocated. There's multiple billion, tens of billions, in fact, in Europe, you know, to chip manufacturing, to, you know, to increase the share of worldwide production of silicon in Europe. And I think we may see, or we may hopefully see, you know, some more willingness to invest in the PCB side and packaging side as well, because, you know, the chips without the rest of it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So, you know, we are discussing that with anybody who listen right now in the EU and other European governments. And I'm hoping that might be a part of the story, because I think whatever else we do, we've got to accept investment is a critical part of keeping pace with technology and more critical now than it ever was.
Yeah, I would agree. You brought up something interesting here, which was, well, 2 points really. First was difficulty accessing capital, which makes sense, but it sounds to me like even if you could access the capital, it's difficult to even access the production assets that you need to be able to produce at scale in these areas and therefore create a return for your investors. So it sounds like they really both go together.
Yeah, and that is an issue. You know, there are, of course, manufacturers in Europe of equipment who have actually been very successful in overseas markets. So they have focused a lot on the overseas markets and done very well, you know, especially equipping China, which has grown, you know, phenomenally in the last 20 years in PCB manufacturing. So a lot of companies have done that. But, you know, specialized equipment like laser drilling machines, you know, there aren't many manufacturers in the world for that kind of equipment. So to get hold of that equipment is pretty difficult. So if you want to say, I want to buy 100 laser drilling machines, you know, I don't know how long the queue would be. It would be pretty long, I suspect. I certainly know for, you know, for the equipment to manufacture, say, PCB materials, say, copper foil, for example, you know, again, lead times are many years to get hold of the drums to produce that. So I think, you know, it's never too late. I mean, obviously, we wherever you start from is where you are. You can't start from anywhere apart from where you currently are. But we have to accept it's not going to happen overnight. So I think it's a question of moving the needle and actually just getting a sense of direction of travel. And if we accept we're going to invest more in the business, then fine, let's start doing it. Let's have that mindset now. But we're certainly not going to find, you know, a 20, 30, 50% increase in PCB manufacturing capability in Europe in the next 6 months or a year. I mean, that's not going to happen. But if we do put our mind to this and we have the resources, then I think over a period of time, same with the silicon as well, by the way, you know, silicon plants don't get built overnight. You know, they again take some years to come into play. But at least if you have that in mind, it gives an optimism and gives a sense of direction. I think that's really what we're looking for here. You know, we were able to stabilize in Europe after the sort of 2000.com crash. We stabilized our manufacturing from around 2010 onwards at around, you know, $2 billion more or less in Europe. Even with some consolidation of manufacturers, you know, COVID sort of knocked us down a bit again, but we came back to that level more or less now. You know, the real threat though, right now for us is, you know, is the energy costs and, you know, there is a risk of this or the mindset being, well, we're going to just drop down and down and down again against competition from Asia. But actually, if we have the right mindset, you know, I'm certainly hoping that we can hold that line and then actually grow that line because the market is growing. PCB worldwide is growing at around 6%. You know, that's the kind of CAGR figures we're looking at. So the projections I saw recently, well, let's say we're around 80 something billion dollars now, maybe 84 billion dollars at the market. The projections are we'll be around 128, 130 billion dollars by 2030 worldwide. So the worldwide market is growing and has been growing. What I think we're asking for is that the European manufacturing sector should at least have that growth as well. So rather than staying still, which would be, of course, you know, dropping in percentage terms, let's try to grow from that. We currently have around, 2.5% of the world PCB manufacturing in Europe. You know, holding it there would be, of course, the first line. But actually, to grow that from 2.5, you know, perhaps to 3, 3.5, 4 again would be wonderful. But that will require significant investment and will require some years. So I think, you know, that's the kind of mindset we have to have for this. And it's easy to become a bit despondent, a bit negative around, you know, around the manufacturing of what's happened. But, you know, things are moving now. You know, China is dominant in terms of PCB manufacturing. Took that position, you know, some years ago now, but certainly looking at the way that map is configured, there are many PCB manufacturers in China owned by Taiwanese companies, for example, and you know there are political risks around China. You know, it's unfortunate to say around Taiwan as well to some degree. You know, it's of course not subject to the same political controls as China, but there are tensions, you know, and all of us are aware of that as potential risk. And most of us have woken up to the fact that when we do get, you know, supply chain issues in the market, it can be devastating. You know, we saw it through COVID. We couldn't get materials out of Asia. We saw it with the ship that went sideways in the Suez Canal and blocked supplies for some days. You know, so these supply chain risks are pretty real now. You know, there's been a massive migration in the last 20 years of the supply base for electronics. So the consumer base is still very strong in Europe. You know, we are great consumers. I think the EU27 is either number one market in the world or number two to the US. So we are both the biggest markets for these products. And the manufacturing base, of course, was here, you know, 25 years ago, more or less in pace with our demand. So the supply and demand side were pretty much balanced. The demand has carried on growing, but the supply side has really migrated across to China primarily. And there is a move now to move some of this manufacturing, of course, out of China and away from Taiwan to some degree as well, primarily China. And the figures I've seen show there's a migration in the range of perhaps 30% of PCB manufacturing away from China and into Southeast Asia. So I'm not talking about bringing it back to Europe or the US right now, but certainly moving this out of that region. And we're looking at places like, you know, Thailand, like Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines. So there is a potential to move that business or to migrate some of the business away from focusing on China to give a bit more resilience for the supply chain. So that's already occurring. So it's not a big step to imagine that some of that could migrate back into Europe and North America as well. You know, it's already on the move, so why not consider that too? So I think, you know, things are moving in terms of the map, the manufacturing map for electronics and PCB in particular. And I think it will be a good time for us to really consider doing that as well and moving some business back into Europe.
So you mentioned expansion into Southeast Asia, right? Thailand, Vietnam. But two other areas where we've been hearing about outside of Southeast Asia are Mexico or Latin America more broadly and India. Where else have you heard of companies expanding their capacity outside of China, Taiwan, Southeast Asia, but not necessarily into Europe or the US, which are essentially the end consumer markets?
I mean, what has been talked about is India quite a bit. I mean, India has around, I think, it imports around $2 billion, I think, of PCBs per year, something like that. And India has been, you know, touted for growth and domestic manufacturing for some years now. I think the big problem that India faces, or what I've certainly heard, is infrastructure. So there is still a lack of infrastructure in the country to really absorb that. But I think there's a desire there, absolutely. There is, you know, a big electronics base there. There's design there, of course, as well. And of course, demand is increasing. So I think that's something that I think we should see on the table. But I have to be honest and say I haven't heard that in the recent discussions. I'm hearing very much Thailand as being the number one destination. Vietnam is already has something, and you know, looking at Indonesia and Malaysia as the primary market. So I think India should be on that list, and I think it probably will be on that list, but not right now. You know, that's something that will probably come a bit more into the future. I think commentators I've seen said, yeah, it's a potential, but actually not in this current round. I think Mexico, of course, has been a long term partner, you know, for North America, you know, offshore, but, you know, but not too far away, which is also beneficial. I don't know too much about Mexico or the business there, but I know there are automotive producers and their supply chain who do operate in Mexico. And that does seem to make sense because, you know, you are very close to a final market. I guess the problem for us in Europe is, you know, the nearest will be India, but India's still far away. You know, it's still big distances to Europe from Asia in general. So we don't have the benefit of something like Mexico on our doorstep. The nearest big producer to us is much further away than Mexico is for North America, in fact.
Now, in terms of the investment, one thing I'm wondering, and this comes from the fact that typically more advanced manufacturing capabilities require higher levels of investment. This seems to me that the trend is going to create a situation where the big manufacturers get bigger. So in order to support UHDI packaging, they need a lot of capital investment. It's just less risky to invest that with a larger company versus a mom and pop company. And then they're much more likely to be able to access the scale of customers that are going to then create a positive return on that investment. Would you agree with that? And do you think that's what we're going to see? Something where we're going to have more consolidation, more acquisitions, or just some of the bigger players continue to get larger?
Yeah, it's been going on for many years now. I don't think there's any surprise that we're seeing that. You know, certainly in the PCB sector, you know, PCB companies, if you look back many years, were typically a lot smaller than their supply base and their customer base. You know, there are big OEMs they were feeding, and they're being supplied by big manufacturers. So, you know, the PCB guys are being squeezed from all sides. And you've seen, though, with the consolidation that we've seen in the business, that there are some now very big PCB manufacturers, you know, guys in billion-dollar scale, many billion-dollar scale, which makes a bit more sense. So I can't imagine we're not going to see that continuing. You know, there are some very large manufacturers, and acquisitions are still continuing. You know, companies are still acquiring smaller competitors and building up. So yes, I think that's going to carry on. And I think it's necessary as well. You know, the PCB manufacturers have to have some strength. And, you know, when they have a bigger scale, of course, they have access to easier access to capital markets. There's no doubt about that. So I think, yeah, I see that happening. You know, the mom and pop shops are great and they have a place. There are some specializations still, let's not forget. You know, there are very specialized markets in our business. You know, I look at things like, very specialized antennas, medical devices, you know, a few companies that really, really specialize into those kind of areas. And we have them in Europe. We have a big cluster, in fact, in Switzerland, of medical makers and guys who are very much involved in the low loss, you know, antenna business, very specialized producers. You know, those guys are going to continue and they're going to survive. You know, they have very, very well-defined markets, very defined specializations, and that makes a lot of sense. But the broader PCB guys who have the big, big range of products and big range of markets they supply, I think are bound to continue to consolidate and get bigger. I think that makes absolute sense. So, yeah, I think I probably see it that way. I see the large ones on the one hand, and I see the very specialized, yeah, perhaps even relatively small companies. You know, we're talking perhaps in some cases just a few millions of dollars or a few tens of millions of dollars of turnover. But very successful, very high margins and very well-defined markets. And I think that's will probably differentiate the kind of players into the future. I guess the ones that will get lost are the kind of small general purpose players, you know, the guys who haven't got the scale and haven't got specializations either. And probably I would say, looking at the whole market, you see that across the whole supply chain as well. You know, thinking to Ventec, for example, as a materials producer, you know, Ventec is not the biggest materials producer by a long measure, but Ventec has many specializations, so many areas where it really really has a high focus, and you know, like the IMS, polyimide business, and now low loss. So you know, some specializations. There are other manufacturers that produce big volume with massive benefits of scale, you know, for the large volume, big series production. And I think there's obviously a place for that as well. But the ones who try to do both things are probably the ones who will suffer the most. So either be a big volume producer, very, very capable in volume, or be somebody who's very specialized and target markets where there are lots of value to be added, let's say, in these kind of smaller, more specialized markets. But I say smaller, you know, even niche can be pretty big these days. You know, polyimide will be a good example of that, where, you know, the niche is many tens of millions of dollars. Very nice business. Nowhere near the size, of course, of standard FR4, but of course, very, very specialized and potentially bringing higher margins, you know, for a specialized manufacturer with a high variety of different copper claddings, different thicknesses, so massive range of complexity, and of course for that, you know, people understand they have to pay a premium. Whereas, of course, when you're buying standard products, you know, premiums are more difficult to discuss. So, I think you know, there's definitely a kind of segregation in the market for that, and I see it through the entire supply chain. Again, OEM specialize, of course, they have their specialities. Board shops tend to be general purpose. And the suppliers tend to be general purpose. But I think in the board side and the supply side now, we are seeing some specializations now that target particular sectors that really fit their business model and fit their company. So, yeah, I think that's how I will see it going forward. But certainly more consolidations, yeah. There's no doubt that will continue on the volume side of things.
So in order to overcome some of possibly the pricing pressures and then access specialized capabilities, do you think we'll ever see a return to captive operations? Or maybe not fully captive operations, but where a company buys out their supplier and owns the supplier and they can cut out the overhead. And then also they can run it like a typical fabrication or contract manufacturing business where they give others in the industry access to those capabilities. Is that a model that we might ever see?
Yeah, it's a great question because things tend to go this way, don't they? You hear big is beautiful, then small is beautiful, and round it goes. I mean, when I joined the business, many years ago now, they were mainly captive shops. So the OEM had its own manufacturing, so an assembly, the whole thing was in one place. I have got one example. There is a company in Estonia actually doing something similar now. It's an OEM. They have their own assembly, but then now they're building a board shop. So actually, I know one example where that's happening, and they're doing that because they want control of the whole process. And I think, I can see that. It sort of goes a bit against the business model that we've been employing the last sort of 30 years or 40 years now. But actually, yeah, I can see that, and I can see that that does have some makes some sense, especially when a manufacturer, an OEM, has a very well-defined technology that they're active in. So they haven't got to be too general purpose. Of course, you can make a plant very nice if you can make it dedicated and specialized around a particular kind of process, particular kind of technology. It's when you get general purpose that the costs tend to rise. And yeah, I see no reason why someone who does that couldn't make their plant available on the outside market as well to others. I mean, that would make sense. I don't know what happened with the one I'm discussing or talking about right now. But yeah, I think that's it's a viable prospect for some companies to think in that direction now. Whereas I guess you'd be laughed at 10, 20 years ago saying that, but actually today, yeah, I think that would probably make sense again.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense today as companies start to need more access to that specialization. And so when you brought up specialization, I thought, okay, we could probably see some kind of return to that on a limited scale. I don't think you're going to see every OEM just suddenly buy up a PCB shop so that they can produce their own stuff. I think at some point the cost and the headache of trying to run that operation outweighs the benefit of just reducing the overhead, but it would be interesting to see if that comes back to some extent, and we see that form of onshoring rather than just the general purpose kind of shop onshoring to US and Europe.
Yeah, and we have to sort of think about the model for that as well. I mean, the main reason why people have wanted to take away the piece of manufacturing and the assembly away from their OEM operations is to reduce the fixed costs, to make the cost variable, and that makes a lot of sense. When you build your own plant again, you carry the full cost whether you're busy or not busy, so that's the thing. And if you imagine the investment costs, as we've already said, for a general purpose PCB maker, going forward, very, very high indeed. But if you can nail the technology down, if you can make a dedicated line for your kind of stuff, I can see that as being a potential. Yeah. If we are talking of onshoring, which I guess we are to some degree, and or reshoring, I don't believe we're going to really build back the same way it was. I mean, that's not going to happen. We're not going to go back to the 1980s or 1990s. But the bit that we do that with, I think it makes a lot of sense to give it some critical thought. Say, how should we do this if we're going to bring this back? Or bring something back, or we'll bring part of the supply chain back. What should it be, and how should it look? And I think it should look probably quite different to the way it looked 30, 40 years ago. And that makes a lot of sense. Whereby, an OEM might decide to do that, and actually, rather than encourage his suppliers to invest in more capability, to invest in some of his own, perhaps, for dedicated parts of the line. Now, many guys will see this as anathema. They won't think this really fits their model anymore. But actually, when you consider supply chain risks, you consider the disruption we've seen in the last few years, and there has been substantial disruption. People have not been able to get raw materials at all in some cases. Having no raw materials is a disaster. Your lines stop, completely. So I think, if doing that brings some more resilience, that makes a lot of sense. And I can imagine it now. Yes, I know one example, only one, but a fairly big one, by the way, but only one example. And there could be more in the future who would think in that kind of critical way. So yeah, I think we're going to think about this again. let's think about the whole thing, not just try to, you know, duplicate the way things were. Things move on, and we can perhaps be a bit more smart, a bit smarter as we look forward. So yeah, it certainly should be on the table. Absolutely, Zach. Yeah, good idea.
So one thing that, of course, comes up every single time the onshoring debate comes up, I don't care if it's PCBs or something else, but price, right? There's always the pricing pressure. And of course, one of the main motivators for even going overseas in the first place was because you could access the capabilities you need at a lower price. And of course, with companies thinking about things on a quarterly basis, you can see why they would be so price motivated. Now, in order to overcome the pricing pressure, I think maybe for more general purpose stuff, but I could also see this applying for more specialized stuff. There's been talk that there is a lack of automation. And it's been said to me that if you look at the fabrication process 50 years ago versus today, you probably wouldn't see much of a change until you start looking at the HDI stuff. So I think that begs the question, to what degree would automation, innovations in automation, and maybe greater digitization affect the pricing pressures in the PCB fabrication process and even in the PCB assembly process?
Well, of course they affect it, but I mean, we need to analyze this discussion a bit more. In fact, the reason why the market went to Asia and was offshore was because of price. There are certain projects, especially consumer projects, whereby if you'd carried on with the developed Western world costs, so the costs in Europe, the costs in the US, you'd not have been able to develop these products. I mean, if, for example, a smartphone cost you $5,000, you wouldn't sell very many, you know, because we didn't have the capability to produce that item at the cost the consumer would actually pay. So it's a necessary thing to have had that move in the first place. And it's not entirely built around greed or around profit margins. It's geared around actually capability in the end. You know, there are certain products that would not grow, would not fly at all if you had the overhead and the cost that we've had previously in the West. So, you know, that's the kind of background we're coming from. Coming away from that now, you've got to think about, there will probably always be a differential. I cannot imagine that automation is going to solve all those issues, by the way. I mean, certainly we see more automation. And if you look at some of the modern plants, you look in Europe now, many of these are very, very automated. They use AI features as well. Many of them have single piece flow. So actually, you actually end up with manufacturing plants that know what every panel is, and it adjusts the process line per panel. And it's the kind of technology now that's available within PCB manufacturing suppliers. So that can all be done. And of course, it reduces the cost to some degree. But I think the thing we have to get our heads around is, if people are going to insist on having, let's say, a more local supply chain, a more robust supply chain, more supply security, there's a price to pay for that. You can't have all of that stuff and the same price as you've had it in the past. So, you know, people need to get their mindset beyond the idea of, you know, building a kind of, you know, secure, robust supply chain back in our, you know, local manufacturing in North America or Europe at the same price they can buy the board anywhere else. And as long as people have the anticipation that they're going to be able to do that, we won't get very far. So, you know, resilience costs money, security costs money. So I think, yeah, for sure, there's a step by automation to make this better. But let's not forget, plants in China are very automated as well. They've already got that benefit too. And they have, of course, managers, supervisors paid a lot less than we pay them in Europe and North America. So we do have that problem. We have also, of course, our local costs, energy costs, much higher in Europe than they are in China, factor of 3 to 5, you know, more or less. We have probably taxation much, much higher. Many, many things are much more difficult. Interest rates on loans much, much higher. So we have a lot of costs that will always be there. And I don't see any way of actually making this parity. So if people have the anticipation they're going to actually bring even small parts back at the same price that we can do them in Asia, this isn't going to be the case. There will always be somebody, whether they're in China, whether they're in Thailand or Vietnam or wherever, that will have the benefit of having lower labor costs, lower manufacturing costs, lower managerial costs, to be able to produce these boards cheaper. So yeah, there's a step in that direction, but please let's understand, you know, we can't have everything. You know, we can't have the lowest cost and the most efficiency and the best security and the most resilient supply chain. All these things don't coexist. You know, something has to give along the way somewhere. And there is a value to having resilience. You know, people benefit by having more resilience. And I think that's worth money and that's worth a premium. And I think that's the thing we have to get in people's minds. And I think consumers understand that too. You know, consumers in the end, of course, like to pay the lowest price for everything. But we have, you know, perhaps become a bit more used to price rises in the last year or so. You know, inflation has been running a double digit in many of our economies. You know, you look at the way things have increased in price, and it's pretty dramatic. You know, many things, automobiles, you know, your normal grocery shopping, electronics, everything has got more expensive. And the reality is, if you don't pay the price, you can't get the goods. So people have to sort of come around to this way of thinking in the end. And our manufacturing base has to also understand, you know, nothing is free. So yeah, step in this direction, Zach, sure. But let's not pretend we're going to get back to the same cost, you know, landed board in Europe as the manufacturing cost in China. You know, we're not going to be able to do that in the same cost base, the same benefits we saw before. So yeah, those are my thoughts on it. And I hope people get their minds around that. I think consumers have come around to that way of thinking. They have to pay the price, and manufacturers should not use this as an opportunity to hike better profits out of the business. They must understand, you know, this cost has to be absorbed by everybody, including them as well.
Well, one of the reasons I bring up the automation aspect is because that's yet another dimension of potential investment that I think gets unaccounted for, right? I mean, you have to invest in, of course, your workforce, you have to invest in the production assets. But if you really believed, or it was proven, that automation is going to be the secret sauce that relieves that excess pricing pressure and gets you much closer to parity, that also takes a set of investments in software. And some of that could be developed in-house, some of that could be purchased through a vendor. However you get it, there's an investment there. And this is actually pertinent now because there's one manufacturer here in the US, and they marketed themselves as a software-driven manufacturer. They just laid off, I think, 70% of their staff, and they're on the verge of going out of business. And this is after, you know, going public not too long ago. So some folks might know who I'm talking about. I don't want to say their name on the show. But, you know, that just illustrates that automation is not going to be the magic bullet that solves the pricing pressure, kind of like you've been saying.
Yeah. Now, I think the automation brings two things, really. I mean, of course, it does give you potential to reduce cost. I mean, there's no doubt it reduces labor. It does. I mean, that's the reality of it. It also improves the reliability of the process. I think that's the thing you see. You know, you go to China, you don't see factories full of people, you know, manually processing boards. You see massive automated production lines. They don't do it because they want to save cost necessarily. They do it because they want to improve the reliability and the consistency of the product. And that, again, is a big drive for all of us, you know, to improve the consistency of the product. So it's not just there to reduce cost. The way I see automation, and the way I get excited about automation in general, is when you have a process that has many sensors, understands what's going on in the boards being processed, and then has an AI or self-learning function as well. And we're beginning to see this coming through now. You know, AI can bring a lot of potential benefits. You know, humans, of course, you know, we think pretty well generally, but we think within our kind of parameters and within our paradigm. When you see some AI solutions, they're not constrained by the history or the tribal knowledge. You know, they're not constrained at all. They're sort of perfect learning machines, and they can analyze what's going on and improve things. So I think there's potential for that to get better. And I think, you know, I can see AI being quite useful in terms of even production flow scheduling, you know, for example, because when you've got, you know, several hundred process steps, it's pretty hard to calculate how you should do this in the optimum way. Of course, an AI can do that much better than we can as humans because it doesn't have the baggage, and it can also learn from what works, what doesn't work. So I think the next phase of investment we're going to see in automation for sure is coming. and I think pretty sure will have a fairly heavy AI content to it as well, as many things do now. So I think, yeah, there can be benefits there, but for sure it's not the secret sauce. It's not going to solve all our issues. You cannot build a fully automated PCB plant in Europe at the same cost of production as in China. So, you know, that's a concept that isn't going to ever fly. But I think, you know, we can certainly reduce cost to some degree. And I think using AI in there, we can probably improve the quality of the production in there. We can make it more consistent. We can reduce our waste and our scrap levels, which again are important things. You know, one big thing driving the market now is consumer pressure for greener products, you know, using less energy. Of course, there are plants now, you know, ones that Alex Stepinski produces, you know, which are basically waste-free. You know, fantastic concepts, you know, wonderful thinking by starting again. And I think that's the kind of mindset we need for the future. So, you know, if we're going to carry on, you know, we're going to build more plants or bring things back, whatever we do, let's do it in a much more smart way. And I think, you know, the green way of doing it, the automation, the AI, all these things will end up, I think, bringing whatever manufacturing we do bring back, whatever specialization we bring back into our Western world, will be a lot better than it was when it left. And I think that would be a big gain and a big win for us all.
Well, thank you for bringing up the sustainability aspect. I think that's an important point to end on, and very insightful point, because there's been a lot of talk of sustainability this year, including in our industry. And I think you lay out a very compelling vision for the future. So thanks for talking with us today. This has all been very interesting.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Really, really appreciate it. And I've enjoyed the discussion with you, Zach.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
To everyone that's watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button. You'll be able to keep up with all of our episodes and tutorials as they come out. And we've been talking with Alun Morgan today, Technology Ambassador at Ventec, President at EIPC. Make sure to check out the show notes to learn more about Alun and to get access to some great resources where you can learn more about some of the topics we've been discussing today. And last but not least, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we will see you next time. Thanks, everybody.